And Bill Belichick joins us now. Bill, how you doing today?
Great. How's it going?
Oh, doing pretty well. We're in Orlando. You're in Foxborough. We're not going to rub it in. 86 degrees, Bill.
Well, that's nice. Yeah, why don't you send like about 40 of those degrees up here?
Yeah, we'll try to. We'll make a trade that way. Let's talk about yesterday's game. And before we get into the comeback, which a lot of people didn't see coming outside of the team, what can you tell us about Rob Gronkowski? The report's out that he's out for the season with a torn ACL and MCL. What can you tell us?
I think they're still doing some more tests on it today. Obviously it's a concern. I don't know if it looks real good, but we'll wait until we get a little more definite information before we say anything.
And we were talking about this before you came on, Bill. I know T.J. Ward said after the game that he's not out there to hurt people, and the NFL rules make it so that guys have to hit lower and lower. What did you think of the hit on Gronk?
It's not really for me to judge. I think it's something that, if the league has issues with it, they should take it up, or if they don't, they shouldn't. I don't know.
The league has made, obviously a huge effort to eliminate hits to the head, which I think we would all tend to support. I mean, nobody wants headshot after headshot and guys walking around with CTE as they age. But do you think that has led to – have you seen more examples of safeties hitting low and potentially dangerously going after players' legs?
Oh, no question. No question about that.
Is that something that I mean, the NFL's in a bind, I guess, is what I'd say. And so I wonder whether this is okay. I mean, it doesn't help a coach who's going to lose somebody for a year potentially with a knee injury, but is it worth it to try to save the back end of players' lives when they're in their 50s and 60s and potentially dealing with serious problems?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's a question, you should talk to the league and competition committee about and, all that. I think we've heard, a variety of opinions from different people on that, players, ex-players, guys who have played the position, doctors, everything else. So I think that's something that you should ask them because they've done all the research on it and they seem to have the answers.
Well, my final question on Gronk would be, related to Gronk, would be what do you teach your guys to do in that situation? If you have a safety and they're defending big receivers, big tight ends, what do you say? Do you say hit them low to avoid a penalty? Do you just say wrap them up? I mean, what do you do in that situation?
We've instructed our players as to what the rules are and try to play within them.
What do you learn from the first six games of the year playing without Rob? Now, we don't know how long you're going to be without him. I mean, if it does turn out to be an ACL, it'll be the rest of this year. What did you learn about your offense during the first six games without him that you could potentially use going forward?
Rob wasn't really he wasn't with his training camp either. So, we had a lot of practices and some games. Unfortunately, without his services in there, but it's great to have him back. And, he's a good player, guy that everybody wants to see out there on the team. And, when he's not there, or if he's not there, then whoever's out there, we expect them to do the best they can, do a good job.
Let's talk about the comeback here. I mean, you're down 26-14, and it appears to be, at least from the outside, it appears to be hopeless. And you said after the game, that was interesting, you said it took every little thing had to go right, and it did. As you watched the game today, what stood out to you? I mean, what do you think one of those critical points was or a very critical turnaround for you that allowed you to be in position to win that game?
Everything really. The two seam passes to Edelman, got us going. When we were, two scores down, that was obviously huge. Then able to get the green getting out of bounds. And, you know, then throwing the check down to Shane down there to the, I don't know, 2-yard line, whatever it was. And, you know, being able to get the ball in. We had an extra timeout, or we had one timeout, since there's an extra. We had one timeout because we didn't use it when Cleveland had the ball on offense, when they scored on, I think it was first down. Pass to Cameron. And so we, you know, took a shot at a run there with Shane, and that didn't get in. So we were able to use the timeout there, and we ended up throwing it into Julian on the next play, which came with the penalty. So obviously the penalty was a big, that was a big part of the whole situation as well, because then we did recover the onside kick. We had a much better field position to work with. So. Onside kick was certainly we wouldn't have won without that play. So that was a critical play.
On that onside kick, by the way, was that was that the plan for? I mean, the way Gostkowski did it, or do you say, hey, do what you do, Steven? Or is there a method to the madness where you say, okay, you know, they're vulnerable up the middle. We've seen this on film. You know, try to hit the ball this way. What do you say to him? In those
right.
situations?
Well, I'd rather not get into the strategy on the onside kicks, because that play could come up again at some point, and you know, what we're thinking, what we're trying to do, kind of keep that out of it. But it was, you know, the bottom line was it was a kick that we, you know, we had a chance to get, and it was loose there for a second, and Kyle made a real good play to, you know, come in and get it. Again, that's the kind of situation that, you know, we go over when we say, well, that's why they call it a must onside kick. If you don't get the ball, then you've effectively lost the game. So without that play, we definitely wouldn't have much chance at all of winning. So that was a, you know, key moment for us.
Coach, you've had quite a few of these comebacks and a couple late comebacks late in the games this year. What does that do for the personality development of your team?
The personalities of?
Of the team in general. Does it change? Does it help? Does it add something to the character of the team? What does it do for them?
I mean, I really don't know the answer to that question other than I just say that, you know, our team is a team that has shown consistently that they'll keep fighting. No matter what the situation is, that they'll just keep playing hard. And once we understand, you know, what it is that we need to do, whether that's, you know, score, stop them, block a kick, make a kick, you know, whatever it happens to be, that we'll try to do it. And that's all you can ask for. So we've, you know, had a number of different situations come up at the end of the game, and you know, the things that we practiced. There's plenty of other things that we practice that haven't come up, and we just have to be ready for, you know, whatever the situation is. But you know, it's a credit to the players that they're alert enough and responsive enough to, you know, be able to do the right thing at the right time. Again, it's not the type of situation where you have time to tell everybody what to do. Everybody's got to know what to do, you know, to get it done properly. And so I think that's part of the preparation. One of the strengths of our team has been, you know, their overall preparation for games and situations.
When we talked with you after the Denver game, you guys were obviously shut out in the first half there. You said you weren't really disappointed with the offense, even though they hadn't scored points. You were more disappointed with the game the week before in Carolina when you came away with 3 in the first half. How about yesterday? You go into halftime without any points. Was it a matter of poor execution, bad luck? I mean, how did you view that first half yesterday from your team?
No, I don't think we executed very well at all. We were in long yardage a lot. We turned the ball over. And we dropped balls. We just didn't really do the things that, you know, would give you a good chance to be successful. And you create that many long yardage situations, and it's, you know, it's obviously hard to convert them. We didn't run the ball well enough. We didn't throw it well. We didn't catch it. So we just just too many negative plays, too much long yardage, and that's certainly not the way we wanted to try to play a team like.
You know, how would you
try to play a team like that yesterday? We don't want to play Cleveland, you know, from long yardage and let their defense tee off on us and all that. We just didn't do a good job of controlling that. And we turned the ball over twice, so that's all adds up to not doing what we wanted to do.
Do you find a theme at all with the slow starts? I mean, can you connect a slow start in Carolina, slow start in Denver, slow start against Cleveland?
Yeah. I wish there was something magical that would take that away. We've certainly talked about it, but we've looked at some things. We did a couple things, but obviously that wasn't the answer. Still an issue yesterday. So we'll keep looking at it from a coaching end, and hopefully we can find something that'll improve it. I mean, it wouldn't take much to improve it. We've been pretty ineffective, so hopefully we can find something.
I'd say the good news is there's something in the water, and it's not just in Foxborough. I mean, if you look at the end of your game yesterday, the end of the Baltimore-Minnesota game, the second half of the Philadelphia game in the snow, Pittsburgh-Miami, that we were talking about that before you came on. That play almost worked at the end for Pittsburgh. Runner steps out of bounds by about an inch. It's just, I know coaches always talk about how you have to play 60 minutes, but yesterday was a full illustration of that, wasn't it?
It is, and so many games in this league, come down to that. I mean, you get over basically half the games are a touchdown or less, and a quarter of the games are 3 points or less. So, you pretty good chance you're going to be in one of those kind of games every weekend, and you've got to be ready to handle whatever it is at the end of the game. And that's, I think that's really a thing that you work on as a team and as a coaching staff of, being ready for, different situations, but it's really impossible to practice every situation every week. There's just too many of them. But you try to, hit the main ones, hit the ones that, you think are most likely to come up, and also things that are, for whatever reason, more appropriate to that game possibly than another game. But that's, and then you hope that that you can carry that execution out once it actually occurs, and that's not always easy either.
From an X and O perspective, we see so many of these games where they can be low scoring for 55 minutes or so, and then the last 5 minutes or 2 minutes or whatever it is, the team seem to go up and down the field almost effortlessly. Is there a common theme between the games that tend to end that way that you would understand as a coach that I wouldn't understand as somebody who's never played the game at a high level?
Certainly there's a point where defensively, when you have a lead, you're more concerned about the clock than the score. If they run out of time, you can win the game. You don't have to really stop them. You can just, time can expire. But you don't want to, at times, commit too many resources to having to stop them, because that's not as important as the time element of it. But I'd say more than that, sometimes it's just execution and just the way things match up. Sometimes you have a certain defense and a certain play call, and that's a great matchup, and it could occur at any time. It could occur in the first quarter. It could occur in the fourth quarter. But, sometimes it's interesting how you get a play at the end of the game, and it just, for whatever reason, just happen to get it against the right thing, or maybe the wrong thing. You're on the other side of the ball, and the outcome's a lot different than a similar play that happened earlier in the game against something that was different. So I don't really have a specific answer for it other than, there's times when the defense is trying to just conserve time more than they are trying to really stop the offense. But other than that, no. I wish there was some magic to it that we could all understand, but I don't know what it is.
All right, Bill, it's time now for the Coach's Question of the Week. It's brought to you by your local Mercedes-Benz dealers. The all-new Mercedes-Benz CLA has arrived. See them on the web at mbusa.com. This week's question comes from Mike in Medford. Mike wants to know, this is a popular one. I heard you were asked this question during the week. Maybe he's got a different spin on it. He wants to know, you were the coach of the Cleveland Browns for 5 years. Is there anything special or anything you've learned since leaving Cleveland as the head coach?
Anything I learned? I'm sorry, what now?
He said, anything special about facing the Browns and anything you've learned since leaving there?
Anything special I learned about facing the Browns from when I was there 15 years ago?
No, he wants to know if there's anything special. I think he wants to know if there's anything special about facing the team. Two-part question, I guess. Anything special about facing the Browns, one, and then two, what's the big thing you've learned since leaving there in 1995?
Oh, okay. I don't think there's anything that special about the Browns. I mean, every game's a big game. When you only have 16 of them, it doesn't make any difference who you play. It's a big game, and we'll do everything we can, put our best into every single game. As I've said many times, the two things probably that I have done a little bit differently here than I did at Cleveland would be, I'd say, number one, to delegate a little bit more, and number two, to be a little bit more aware of some of the things that go on off the field, relative to the things like chemistry and, players' families and their wives and sometimes transitions that they have to make from coming to a new team or from college to pro and things like that. Just being more aware of some of the things that happen off the field that affect what happens on the field, and not think that it's all just about what happens on the field. It's all X's and O's. Everything can be solved with a play or blocking adjustment or something like that. There's a big psychological and chemistry aspect of a team that in professional football that I'm not saying I wasn't aware of it. I'm just saying I put probably more thought and more emphasis into it than I did when I was in Cleveland.
Well, Coach, we certainly appreciate it. You got a Sunday game in Miami next week, division game. We'll talk to you on Monday.
Okay, great. Sounds good. All right.
Okay, Bill.
There's Bill Belichick.